This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And we are 22 days away from a presidential election, which, of course, we'll be talking about much in the next 3 weeks. And according to the Las Vegas odds right now, posted by Real Clear Politics, Donald John Trump has a 54.3% chance of winning the presidency come November 5th. And lots can happen in 3 weeks, but the momentum has moved from one side to the other, and right now it is with the former president. And LSU stunned the world because the Tigers weren't playing very well for most of the game, but LSU and Brian Kelly came back. Garrett Nussmeier threw a couple of touchdowns late in the game, one with a few seconds remaining in regulation, and then the first in his initial pass in overtime, and LSU beat Ole Miss 29-26. LSU now ranked eighth as the Tigers head to Arkansas, and we'll be talking with Todd Horn, the executive editor of Tiger Rag magazine. But we start with Jan Honzinski, who is a professor at LSU, has been for 23 years. She's in the Department of Kinesiology and an authority on motor control issues, including Parkinson's, which, of course, is one that affects far too many people in our country and in our state. And good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You've been doing this for a while. Is Parkinson's more prominent now than it has been?
I think a lot of the neurological diseases are increasing in size and number. Percentage is a little bit higher, too, especially if you look at the older adults above 80. It probably affects about 2% of our population. And one of the more interesting things is it's the second largest neurological disease past Alzheimer's. And there's a lot of people that still don't know much about it.
Well, I have often been under the impression that when somebody has a tremor, that's a telltale sign. That doesn't always mean Parkinson's, though, does it?
That is correct. That is correct. There is a big balloon, if you want to think of it that way, that contains Parkinsonian symptoms. And a small area inside that large balloon is when you have Parkinson's. And that's when you have some of the major symptoms like bradykinesia, which just means slower movement. You can have rigidity, you can also have the tremors, of course, and posture instability. Those are the four cardinal signs.
One of my mentors, Dale Thorne, professor at LSU for many years, he died with Parkinson's and had that tremor for many years, but his mind was sharp until the very end. He died at 71, 10 years ago, but sometimes there is cognitive impairment as well.
There can be. That's absolutely true. But I'm glad you said he died with Parkinson's, not because of Parkinson's. Because Parkinson's itself does not kill people. It's some of the symptoms and some of the other things that come along that are, if they're not treated correctly or can no longer be treated well, that affect the people.
Sleep problems are often associated with Parkinson's, aren't they?
It is. Now, you need to take it in with a grain of salt, because they might say a lot of people will have sleep problems, and that is true. However, I have some people that I've worked with that have actually, they sleep too much. They're always tired, and so they are able to sleep a lot. And so Parkinson's is one of those disorders that it can look a lot different in every single individual.
Again, 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number for Jan Honzinski. Dr. Honzinski's research involves the study of motor control and sensory-motor integration, a task involving whole-body movements. She explores the control mechanisms during movements involving the entire body. And I'm looking at your bio, and you say you study the effects of gaze direction, sensory alterations, and my impression is that you could probably, I know you wouldn't make a diagnosis, but you could learn about a lot about somebody just being with them for a few minutes, couldn't you?
Yes, you can. In fact, we get used to watching people as they move, I mean, even at airports. For example, you sit there and watch people as they move around. And a lot of people like to people watch. I'm one of them. And sometimes you notice something like a reduced arm swing, smaller steps. Maybe I'll see a tremor on one side or something that might make me lean. Ooh, that person may have Parkinson's disease. Normally, though, it's we go through a series of items before we actually can determine whether they actually do have Parkinson's or not. But I would not be the one to diagnose them. I would send them to a neurologist and a movement disorder specialist, which we have several very good ones in town and in New Orleans and the surrounding area.
Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And we will go to the phones in just a few with Jan Hodzinski. But Tom on Bluebonnet asked about this malady called Lewy's body dementia. Is that related to Parkinson's?
Lewy body dementia can be. There are Lewy bodies that develop in the brain in, for example, Alzheimer's disease. They also can develop in Parkinson's. They can develop in some other disorders. And there's these tangles that can get caught up in the brain and affect different things. But when it does get tangled in different areas, it can cause a form of dementia. And that is a particular type of Parkinson's, if you will.
Amy on Burbank. Please be brief. Amy, you lead off with Jan Hodzinski. Hi.
Hello. So I'm calling about my mother. She has been told she has characteristics and is just now this week going to be able to see a neurologist. What are some of the first questions she should ask during this appointment as she starts this journey?
What a great question, Amy. Thank you for that. A couple of the questions I would like her to bring in, I would like you to sit down with her and come up with some questions that you have already, but be ready to tell a lot of the symptoms that she is seeing and some of the things that you've seen that maybe your mom hasn't noticed. Write those down because they're going to be looking at everything. They'll probably run some scans to make sure it's not something else that's causing it, et cetera. But then where do you get information about what to do next? And I would just be ready because just because she has some symptoms that may look like it, she may not be diagnosed with Parkinson's right away. It may take a little while. They may have to rule out some items. They'll do some extra testing, but have a list of things that you think are most prominent that you've noticed a change in her.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you're on with Jan, Dr. Hodzinski. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, good morning. I've read recently that there's a connection between the gut and Parkinson's development that involves an autoimmune reaction. I was wondering if you could talk about that. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Patricia, excuse me. I know very little about it, but I have read about it recently. There is a certain group of people with Parkinson's disease that they can now diagnose a little more about what's going on in their gut or in their feces. But again, that seemed like it was a subgroup of people with Parkinson's, so there is definitely something going on. We know that's been happening for a while.
Thank you, Patricia. Jim and Walker. Hello, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Dr. Kaczynski. I've got a question. I saw recently on the BBC that they were doing a study in Wales regarding Parkinson's patients in group drumming circles where the patients would be doing drumming and that it like really, really lessened tremors and other symptoms and looked incredibly promising. I was wondering if we were doing any of that here.
What a great question. I'm going to give you a couple of things to think about as you go forward on that one. One is one of the biggest things we know that can help curb or even improve, at least temporarily, possibly even slow down the progression of the disease is exercise. And that's one of the big studies we actually have going on at LSU It's the study in Parkinson's disease of exercise. Now, if you think about it, drumming and swimming and running and all of these things are different types of exercise that might be able to curb the disorder or at least get some of these items under control that don't have the awful side effects that the medicine and some of the surgeries can have. And so it's something that may be linked to the exercise component itself. However, we've also done a study on rhythmic auditory stimulation where we had better benefits in people that were stepping with the rhythmic auditory stimulation than without it. And we believe there's a possibility it might bypass the damaged area of the basal ganglia that is damaged in Parkinson's, that auditory stimulation, and encourage movement.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Dr. Hodzinski, and then it's Franklin Foyle on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Jan Hodzinski, an authority on motor control issues and Parkinson's, and she has taught at LSU for 23 years, PhD, University of Iowa. And coming next is Franklin Foyle, the Baton Rougean, who is the chair of the Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Committee in the Senate, and he has some thoughts about tax reform, which is coming soon to a theater down the street. Again, 877-217-5757. James in Longview, Texas. James, you're on with Jan. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Anyhow, I have Parkinson's for probably about the last 8 years, but mine is a little bit unusual. It's a medicine-induced Parkinson's. In a nutshell, I got hit by a car, had broken bones, and had medicines, and they think that caused it. One of my big issues is balance. Can you give me any tips as far as balance and also alerting my doctors with my blood pressure medicine not to give me a medicine that'll complicate my existing Parkinson's?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first, thank you for calling in. And one of the biggest problems is imbalance in Parkinson's, and a lot of the medicines do not treat that. So one of the biggest things that you can do is keep moving and find things that help you move better. It doesn't hurt to have maybe an assistive device around until you feel more comfortable moving. You might have good days, you might have bad days. You know how you go up and down, you have those on-off periods that the docs always talk about. And so watch out for that. But a little bit of exercise to make you feel more confident and moving, and then an assistive device should not deter you from continuing to move around.
And there is an event related to this. Can you tell us more?
So we're going to actually go. One of the biggest problems with Parkinson's is it's underdiagnosed, and there's a big health disparity out there. And so we're going to the Capital Area Aging Agency on Aging Health Fair on October 17th, and we're going to go out there and see if we can give some assessments to people that are out there, maybe give people some insight to what to look for if you think you have a family member with Parkinson's, and maybe let's get some of these people diagnosed, because the earlier we can diagnose them, the earlier we can treat them and the better life that they can have.
And for those who would like to know more about the particulars, how do they find you?
If they want to call me, they can call the School of Kinesiology. The phone number there is 225-578-2036. And if they are more interested more about the health fair, it is for underserved populations. The phone number there is 225-922-2525 for the local one.
All right. Thank you, Jan.
And thank you.
Doing important work at LSU, which has brought many people from far and near to Tigertown. And Jan is one of those. You were born in Louisiana, weren't you?
I was. Metairie.
Yeah, but you grew up elsewhere and came back home. I
can
relate
correct.
To that.
All right.
All right. Well, we got a Baton Rougean, and thank you. A Baton Rougean through and through in the studio. Franklin Foyle, born and reared in the capital city. One of two sons of Franklin Foyle and the former Judith Johnson. As a high school student, he was a member of the National Honor Society, earned varsity letters in football, track, tennis, and cross country. An Eagle Scout. This guy's right out of Central Casting. And, of course, he went on to serve our country with great distinction after being a cadet at the Old War School. And he was in the U.S. Navy, became a lawyer, and he was in the JAG Corps, right? Right.
That's correct.
And a big birthday coming in 17 days, number 60 for Franklin Foyle, right in his political prime.
No, you're right. I'm growing up, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I think 60 now is the political prime for politicians. And people have mused about whether you would seek higher office. Is that in the offing at some point, as in the next election? We've got another cycle coming in 2027, 3 years away.
You know, I'll tell you, Jim, I'm very happy where I am in the state Senate. I'm able to do a lot here for my local community. I've got experience now because I was in the House for 12 years, so I've learned a lot, and there's still more to do here. I've been working hard.
And you have another 4 years after this, right?
I do. I could run for another 4 years at the end of this term, which I still have 3 more years left. I'm chair of the Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Committee this time, which does tax policy. We also do the capital outlay, mm-hmm. which is the construction budget, which is very important here in Baton Rouge with all the things we have here.
Well, we just had a guest who's an authority on Parkinson's, but you have been affected in your family by autism, and if I remember right, in your very first session, you passed legislation requiring insurance companies to cover treatment for children on the spectrum, right?
I did. It's probably one of my proudest pieces of legislation that I've passed, and that was back in 2008. We found that the problem was parents were having, you know, they had children who had autism, but they could not get the appropriate medical care. And so what my bill did is it required health insurance to provide coverages, and it made great gains and progress for these kids mm-hmm. when they were young until, you know, and helped mm-hmm. them become adults in our community, and it was great.
Well, before we get to revenue and taxation, and he is the chair of that committee, and you'll have some heavy lifting to do, but Hal in Monroe notes correctly that on your date of birth, October 31, 1964, in Tiger Stadium, LSU defeated the mighty Ole Miss Rebels 11-10 in one of the most famous games in the rivalry. And, of course, we had another great one the other night, but that was Charlie McClendon and Johnny Vaught. I believe Doug Morrow caught the two-point conversion from Billy Ezell on the day you were born.
In fact, the funny story is my mom's doctor was very nervous that I might come late and ruin his chance to go to the game. Luckily, I was born at 6 a.m. that morning. But he was very concerned about getting to the game that night, so it all worked out.
Yeah, well, it was another classic one Saturday night, and now all is well in Tiger Town until the next game. And right now, Brian Kelly's got momentum. But Jeff Landry's got momentum. We had him on the show last week, and in 9 months, that guy he's not let his foot off the pedal, has he?
No, he's been very proactive. I've been impressed with the way he's governed so far. I've gotten to know him better. I did not know him that well before he won. But he has been very ambitious, and I'm excited about his tax reform plan. If you look at it, we haven't done anything major in tax reform since 1974, which is when we had our last Constitution. So it's very ambitious, but I think he's got some really good ideas.
What is in the plan that you like?
Well, there's several things. One is it's going to help bring businesses to our state. We've got some bad business taxes right now, which discourage businesses from coming here. We have the franchise tax. We have the inventory tax. And you look at these national groups like the Tax Foundation out of Washington, D.C., and they do rankings. Right now, we're like 41st out of 50. They said if we made these changes, mm-hmm. we could get down to like number 9. And that's what businesses look at when they come to a state. So I think that's really important.
Well, Jan Moeller, our friend at Invest in Louisiana, says that some of the ideas are good, but we may have a $1 billion deficit. Is that a real concern?
I don't think so. I don't think we're going to pass a package that would leave us with a deficit. We're going to get fiscal notes on these bills and have an idea of what the fiscal impact will be. But the idea is to actually reduce income tax for most people mm-hmm. and then to broaden the base for sales tax. Right now, there are a lot of things that we don't charge sales tax on that people probably aren't even aware of.
Well, it's a case in which if you're in one of those businesses, it suddenly you'll be paying taxes, like one of them's like yard service, that sort of thing. That could be a bit of a problem, couldn't it? Suddenly you're having to pay more to do business.
Well, it is a challenge if you're not paying sales tax now because you have to collect it from the consumer. But we're trying to model our laws after other states, like North Carolina does a lot of these services. But let me give you an example. If you go to Benny's Car Wash right now, you don't pay sales tax on the car wash, but you would pay it to get your oil changed. So it seems like that would be an easy place to broaden the scope.
Unless you own Benny's.
Well, that's right. And the consumer, obviously, is going to pay this. And mm-hmm. they're already remitting sales tax.
Well, I remember Bobby Jindal had an idea that was more sweeping. But right now, like if somebody buys advertising on a media outlet, there's no sales tax on that. Now, there's a tax on the bottom line. But Jindal wanted to tax that, as Huey Long did as well. Hopefully that's not on the table for those of us in the business.
I don't think it is. I mean, there is a list of proposals that the governor has put forward in some sample, not sample, but some draft bills. But look, it's all debatable. We're going to have committee meetings. We're going to hear from the public, and we'll see what we come up with. But I think we'll come up with something very good at the end of the day. We won't have everything that's in the governor's package, and that's what part of the debate process is.
Well, we also are going to have reduced rates for income tax if the governor gets his way, and we'll talk with Franklin Foyle about how that could work and not cause a huge gap in sustenance for the budget, which of course would mean cuts to higher education and health care, and LSU, which is your district and your alma mater, would be hit heavily as it was during the Jindal years. We'll talk about that. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number 877-217-5757. We're continuing our conversation with State Senator Franklin Foyle, who's the chair of the Senate Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Committee, and there will be a special session, presumably in November. Have the dates been set?
It looks like November 6th through the 21st is what I heard yesterday.
The day after the election.
The day after the election for 2 weeks is what we're looking at. So it's going to be a busy time for sure.
Yeah, and there are a lot of items, 10 different bills.
Right now there are 10 different bills. One is a constitutional amendment, and that's one of the reasons the governor's pushing to do something before the end of the year to try to get this on the ballot next year. So it's a very ambitious package, and I think a lot of it has a real good chance of passing, but we're going to have to debate it.
But it'll be, when it goes to the ballot, it'll be all or nothing.
Well, not necessarily. I mean,
Governor said last week.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah, it's going to be tied. Most of it will be tied to the constitutional amendment, which will be on the ballot in March.
Can some of this be done without being in a constitutional amendment?
Some of it could be, because some of it's just statutory right now. But the goal is we want to pass it as a package.
All right. Well, what about reducing the tax rates to what, 3.5%?
3% is what's on the table right now. Try to have a flat rate where everyone pays the same tax. And reduce it. Right now, we have graduated income tax rates from 6, 4, and 2 maybe. So put everything at 3 would be the goal. And so we're not going to wipe out the income tax because of the fiscal impact that would have. There are other states around us, Tennessee, Florida, and Texas, which have no income tax. But there's a movement across the South to reduce income tax rates.
And this is a big move, but some say it would help those who need help the least. And we have a poor state, second poorest state in the country. What about those at the bottom end? How does it affect them?
Well, one thing is I know the governor wants to put in a standard deduction for the lowest earning income people, and that will help them in that respect. Also, for retirees, the plan would add a exemption for retiree income 3 times of what we're doing now. Right now it's $6,000. We would potentially increase that to $18,000.
Now, this quite possibly will get through the legislature. We do have a supermajority of Republicans, most of whom are conservative. But your colleague in the Senate has been the guy who's running the show in the Senate. He's been Cameron Henry. He's been a little bit of a thorn in the governor's side. Are those two on the same page?
I think they are. I spoke to him the other day. He has been cautious about moving too quickly, and I appreciate that approach. He wants to make sure that we have all the facts first before we jump into a special session. He wants to make sure that we're going to be successful. So I think he is on board, and we are going to have a committee meeting of my committee probably in the next couple of weeks before the special session even to talk about the bills and give the public a chance to come to the Capitol and weigh in.
All right, a few other questions from listeners. This one from Holly in the Garden District. The mayor's race, do you have a horse?
I've not taken a particular position for any of the candidates. I know them all. I serve with Sharon Broom and Ted James, like them both personally, so I'm looking forward to serving with whoever ends up winning that race.
What about the coach?
I don't know the coach personally, but I've heard good things about him, and he seems like he would be a good candidate. Well, but once again, I know them all, and they're all good people, and I look forward to working with whoever wins the race.
Well, Coach Edwards, unfortunately, is skipping today's debate of candidates at the press club, and yours truly will be the moderator. Anybody who wants to come, you're invited. You can come to Drusilla. That's where it's going to be, and the four other major candidates will be there, including the incumbent Sharon Weston Broom, her principal challenger, Ted James, former state rep, who've been on the show many times, both of them, and also Nathaniel Hearn, a newcomer making his first foray into elective politics, and Steve Myers, a frequent candidate and the founder of Tiger Rag, which brings us to another question from a listener, and this one is from Tracy at the Capitol. What about returning Mike the Tiger to Tiger Stadium? Franklin Foyle?
I haven't given that a lot of thought, I'll be honest with you. It sounds nice, but we'll have to see what happens with that. I'll let other people make those decisions.
I always thought that was worth at least a field goal to have that Tiger outside the visitor's locker room.
You're probably right.
And, you know, the first Mike went to every game and lived to be 20, and the other Mikes haven't lived as long with this lavish, spacious habitat. But I understand those who are concerned about safety of the Tiger, and some would say that that's it's an anachronistic measure to have the Tiger come to the stadium. But football is a dangerous place. I mean, the players, for example, we just had a guy at LSU with a brain tumor who was misdiagnosed and is now suing the university. But the players Warren Capone, and a great man, and Tommy Casanova, both big stars from the 70s, they've had severe cognitive issues related to the head trauma they received. And now we've got these guys. There's a freshman on the LSU team who's 334 pounds.
That's amazing. I mean, it's amazing how big these folks are.
What will he be like when he's 18 now? What will he be like when he's 48? Or will he be alive? If he doesn't lose weight, he'll have some real issues. So football, we could make a case that we should ban football. Do we want to do that?
I don't think that's going to happen. No, that's not going to happen in this state.
This would be the last place, right?
And I'll tell you, Mike the Tiger, I do want to keep alive Tiger because that's probably the number one tourist place when people come visit us. We go see Mike the Tiger. People love to go see the Tiger
number
cage.
Number one tourist spot in Baton Rouge is the Tiger Cage, which is no longer a cage. It is a spacious habitat, as it should be. And it was Delaine Emmert, the wife of Mark Emmert, who insisted on that. And she got her way, and I think it's wonderful, but... But Mike, the current one, is a beautiful animal. I love big cats, but Mike needs to. He needs a trainer. He needs somebody. He's putting on a lot of poundage there.
He eats well.
He's definitely a big cat. But Franklin Foyle, you're a big cat at the legislature, LSU through and through. And I remember Larry Bankston, who was a state senator, and as you know, he said, "My job is to carry the water for the administration." Do you view yourself in that realm as well?
No, I don't. I want to work with the administration, and I have a chance as a chairman of this committee to help shape the bills that get out, and I think they have some really good bills in the package, and so I want to work together with them to be successful. But I'm a big, you know, my first loyalty is to Baton Rouge and the people here in my community and LSU. Those are my top priorities.
But what about if there is a budget quandary as far as losing revenue is based on these tax changes? We know higher ed will be affected dramatically.
Yeah, and I've been through some bad times in the legislature when the budgets were tough, and that is very difficult times when you have to make those cuts. I don't want to see that happen again, and we're going to be very careful. In fact, one of the things that Cameron Henry has told me is he doesn't want to go forward with our committee meetings till we get good fiscal notes to know what the fiscal impact will be of these bills. So it's got to be a package to make it work financially and to be successful.
And it's amazing when we start talking about LSU and we have Todd Horn of Tiger Rag on deck, but a listener wants to know about this new arena. Do you know any particulars? It's been kind of cloaked in secrecy as to what's going to happen. Do you know anything about this that you can reveal to us?
Not much yet. I've had some people reach out to me to say that they want to come discuss this proposal. I think it's going to be potentially a public-private partnership, sort of like they did in Austin, Texas, is the idea. I think the council already passed something to limit what could be done downtown at the Centroplex or River Center. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But there is some talk about that, but I think it's a long way from happening at this point.
I wouldn't want to fool around with Todd Graves. It is a Raising Cane's River Center. I read in Forbes he's got $9.5 billion. That's a lot of money anywhere, but particularly in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, it's incredible to think that we have someone at that level in Baton Rouge. My hat's off to
107th richest person in the U.S. and one of the youngest at 52. So I suspect he's going to get in the top 100 by next year. And who knows, he might make the top 50.
He may want to come weigh in on the tax policy.
He might. He might, but with that kind of money, he could build a new arena. As I said, why don't we think big? Why don't we go for a Major League Baseball team in downtown Baton Rouge? What do you think? Put a stadium in. Call it the Todd Graves River Center.
People love their baseball.
Raising Cane's baseball stadium. What?
Of course, it's difficult to compete with LSU baseball. That's one thing here. Because I know we've had different minor league teams that have tried, you know, to be successful here. And that's always the challenge. LSU baseball is going to be first
in
this community.
A guy I work with, Andrew Greenstein, said Louisiana is one of the few states with no minor league teams.
Yeah.
No professional baseball teams. And when I was a kid in Little Rock, there were minor league teams in the Texas League in Alexandria, in Lafayette, in Shreveport. But none right now, and LSU has fought mightily to keep Baton Rouge pure, meaning only Tiger baseball. But I don't know that it necessarily would be a competitor. Sometimes when you have more, you get more.
No, you're right. And New Orleans, as you know, for many years had a minor league team, and they ended up finally moving. So, and so did Shreveport. My wife grew up in Shreveport. They had the Captains.
Captains, yeah.
Very popular.
Shreveport Captains. But things change. But the LSU-Ole Miss rivalry is alive and well, and LSU, I think, has won 8 straight times now in Tiger Stadium, and an improbable win, but a win, and now LSU's 8th in the country heading to Arkansas. And Todd Horn, the vice president, executive editor of Tiger Rag magazine, which I have an affiliation with, he was there. What did you think, Todd?
I thought it was a huge win for LSU, huge win. We had said going in that I actually thought it was the most important game in Brian Kelly's career at LSU, certainly since the Alabama game in 2022. And, it was interesting to watch LSU. I thought their defense was the difference, and that was enlightening.
And Garrett Nussmeier caught fire at just the right time, didn't he?
Boy, Garrett Nussmeier, talk about resilience. Correct. I mean, completes less than 50% of his passes. That's unheard of in today's college game. But yet he fires 3 touchdown passes, one to send it into overtime when he hits Aaron Anderson with a three-quarter throw that was just like an NFL-caliber throw, and then hits Lacy.
Yeah, the guy hadn't even made his cut when he threw the
ball.
That's
right. That's right. So, you know, Kelly said that Nussmeier grew more in this game than he's grown in any game of his career. It was only his second start in an SEC game. I think a lot of people lose sight of that. But he's way ahead of both Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow statistically at this point in his career.
Well, he's been at LSU for how many years now?
His fourth year.
Is it fourth or fifth?
Well, he's a redshirt junior, so this is his fourth.
But he got a COVID year in there too, didn't he? I think he got an extra year. I think this may be year 5, but we'll look it up. We'll talk about it when we return on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and all is grand in Tiger Town. LSU beating Ole Miss 29-26 in overtime, and LSU is headed to Arkansas as the 8th ranked team in the country. Arkansas is 4-2. The Razorbacks started as a 4.5-point underdog, and that's moved to 2.5. So the money right now is going on Arkansas, but LSU has won 2 close ones over South Carolina and Ole Miss, and lost a close one to USC. And I think Todd Horn was right. Garrett Nussmeier's first plays at LSU were in 2021, and that would mean that he was a senior in high school in 2020, the COVID year, so he would be in his 5th year, as Todd correctly stated, as a junior, and his 4th year as a junior, he'll have a 5th year as a senior, unless he goes pro. And with his stats, Todd, he's thrown already for, 18 touchdowns and almost 2,000 yards. Oh, how times have changed in 6 games. I would think that he might be marketable as an NFL draftee come next year, early next year. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to come down to, you know, as it always seems to, at the end of the year, where he's ranked in the NFL draft. Right now, there are several mock drafts that have Nussmeier listed as a top 10 draft choice. One going number 1 to the New York Giants to team up with Malik Nabers for the Giants. I think if that's the case and that plays out, then he's gone. But I also think it depends. There's still 6 SEC games left in the regular season, And I can't tell you what's going to happen in any of those games, including Arkansas this weekend, because parity is so tight in all of college football, but specifically in the SEC this year.
Yeah, I saw our friend Gordy Rush the other night. He said, nobody's great. Nobody's great. And of course, that would mean that somebody's going to win the national title. And who knows? Maybe Brian Kelly can do what Les Miles did and what Ed Orgeron did. They won in their third season. So it's time for Kelly to bring a national championship home, isn't it?
And Saban
fourth year
for Saban, right? So yeah, it's either this year or next for Kelly, or he's got to go, right?
That's what some would say. That's what some would say. But national championships, I think the fandom's gotten spoiled. I remember I was born in the year of 1958, and we went 45 years in Louisiana before LSU won another national title.
Yeah, it was a different time. Things have changed.
Right? They've changed, but there are a lot of people who are competitive in college football. There are more teams who aim for national titles in college football than in, say, women's basketball. There are probably only five or six teams who can win a national championship in women's college basketball every year, but in football, probably 20 teams could.
That's true.
And LSU is one of those. And right now, if they had the playoffs right now, they would get an invitation now.
They absolutely would. And then with this 12-team playoff and the way it's structured this year, any team that gets in could actually have a chance to win it, have a good chance to win it. And right now, everything's on the table for these LSU Tigers.
And Brian Kelly, who in a few days will be 63 years old, he's doing pretty well right now, 25-8.
Well, you know, I mentioned that I thought this was his biggest game, the biggest game of his career at LSU, certainly since the Alabama game in 2022 when they beat Nick Saban on that two-point conversion in overtime. I thought this was a big game because I think this is the proof of what he's doing is working. And I think the biggest manifestation of that was, you know, the defense. If you look at last year's LSU-Ole Miss game, LSU's defense, which was historically the worst defense in LSU's history, gave up 706 yards total offense to Ole Miss and 55 points. And that was really when Kelly decided, you know, I've got to revamp this and rebuild this whole defense. And he spent over $16 million total net to bring in a whole new staff led by Blake Baker. And I think they were keeping their hand, their thumb on the wraps of that defense, saving it for this Ole Miss game this year.
All right.
Well, and it worked.
And they also invested about $17 million in payroll for players, too. So times have changed just a little bit.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Todd Horn, Vice President and Executive Editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, the Bible of LSU Sports. Eddie Cashew is with us, a great Louisiana name. And for those unfamiliar with Eddie, he's been doing his thing for a while, and he's involved with a documentary that will be showing that is fascinating, a Baton Rouge screening of Ancestral Artistry, the Influence of Africans and Creoles of Color on Louisiana Architecture. Eddie is a Louisiana Architecture Foundation board member. He is an architect. He owns the firm Environmental Design, where he practices sustainable architecture and historic preservation. And good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
And also a retired professor of architecture at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. But this production will be showing a 60-minute film produced by the Louisiana Architecture Foundation. A panel discussion will follow, and it's showing this Thursday at 7 p.m., and it's at the Capitol Park Museum, 660 North 4th Street. And tell us more about the production that will be for public viewing this week.
Well, this is our latest film. We've been working on this for the last 2 years, and it has to do with African slaves and free people of color and their influence on Louisiana architecture. And it's a really good film about what's unique about Louisiana. Our architecture is very unique, and he goes into explanation of why that is. We were a colonial settlement, and France brought their architecture here from a colder climate. They built that same thing here. It didn't work very good. They were not very comfortable. So it went through a climatic adaptation to make it more comfortable for humans in a hot, humid climate, which is very different from the kind of climate that they have in France. It hits on the craftspeople that, especially Africans and free people of color, and how they got into the crafts and why that was important. We talk about Creole and what that's all about. And I consider myself Creole, a French Creole, but Creole has gone through many different changes over the years. And we discussed that. We discussed the Code Noir and how unique Louisiana was to rich cultures or mixed cultures that happened here in the colony that didn't happen anywhere else in the United States.
All right, you're hearing the voice of Eddie Cazieu. He is involved with the Baton Rouge screening of the documentary Ancestral Ancestry, The Influence of Africans and Creoles of Color on Louisiana Architecture. And it's 7 o'clock Thursday night, Capitol Park Museum, 660 North 4th Street, in a panel discussion. Who was involved in this project? Because it is an ambitious idea and one that is overdue for telling, but obviously there had to be some people who were earnest to get this going. What happened, and who were the people? Who were the major players?
Well, as the Louisiana Architecture Foundation, we were interested. The last film that we had done were about two Jewish architects in Shreveport, which was a very unique situation. And this time we wanted to do something with people of color. And we started looking at Julian White at one time, who was a good friend of mine. He taught at LSU, and he had an architectural firm. But I thought it needed to be much wider than that, because Louisiana has the unique history of its architecture and who built that architecture and how it was designed and how it was changed for this climate. So there's a number of people on our board that worked with it, but Make Made were the filmmakers that we had gotten, and they did an excellent job. We worked with them on the research part of it and developing the film, and then doing the film in itself and the editing of that film, we worked very close with them.
How many slaves were involved in making the architecture as prominent and as notable as it is?
Well, every plantation had a slave usually that was a blacksmith, and that he was probably the most important slave on the plantation and built a lot of the tools and everything that were used on the plantation. But we also have people that, when the Americans took over the colony, they separated black and white, and we had a lot of Creoles of color that did not want to be considered black and have to go to the black school, so they got into the trades. And that has been handed down through many generations. And I remember growing up in New Road, you know, if you wanted a good mason, you got one of the fobs, mm-hmm. because he had learned it from his father and his grandfather, and that was handed down through generations of that family.
Well, congratulations on the work. Again, Capitol Park Museum, 660 North 4th, this Thursday, October 17th, 7 p.m., and a 5:45 private sponsor reception, I'm told, and 6:30 doors open for general admission. For those who would like more information, Eddie Cazieu, about ancestral artistry, the influence of Africans and Creoles of color on Louisiana architecture, what's the best way to find you and others who are involved in this?
The best thing to do is to go to our website, louisianaarchitecture.org, and look up ancestral artistry, and all the information is there about the Baton Rouge screening. And we'd like to give a shout out to our major sponsor, Salas O'Brien, and also to thank Billy Neungesser and the Louisiana American Institute of Architects that helped support this film.
Well, thank you, sir, and congrats. Appreciate you, Eddie.
Thank you, Joe.
And I do want to note that not only did LSU win in overtime Saturday, but so did Southern. The Jaguars won 22-19 at Shell Energy Stadium in Houston over Texas Southern, and over Prairie View, excuse me. And Southern University is back on the beam. The Saints took it on the chin, though, 51-27, losing to Tampa Bay. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.